This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
All right. This is Scott.
And this is Rico.
And welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy.
Welcome, gang.
It's good. Tonight, we are going to be, Rico, is that the request line?
I didn't know we were doing that yet, but yeah, it is the request line.
All right. Let's pick it up. Let's answer it. Okay. All right. West of the Rockies. This is RNRA. You're on the request line. Wait a minute. Dude, what the fuck was
that?
Are
you kidding me? It's this guy again.
You know, this guy used to call into the Elvira show, and now he's calling us, and it's weird. Yes, sir. What is that? Okay, he wants to hear a song. Okay, what song do you want us to do an autopsy on tonight, sir? Oh, okay. Love Walks In by Van Halen. See ya. Terrific.
We're done with that guy.
All right, good. Okay. You know what? Before we do Love Walks In, let's do
the news.
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
So the first thing I want to talk about is on April 12th of 2015. You know who Florence Welch is?
From Florence and the Machine.
Yeah, she's really fantastic, by the way. On April 12th, she broke her foot leaping off the stage at Coachella. So for the next several weeks after that, she had to sit down while she was performing. Well, here's why I mentioned this one is because it seems like, is that like a thing now where like you're not officially a thing unless you fall off stage and break your foot, like a la Axl Rose or Dave Grohl, or I think many, like there's been a few other people too, but it's not, I am not officially like in that tier one of music until I jump off the stage and break a bone or something.
Have we entered into a new era of rock stardom where part of earning your stripes as a rocker is you have to be on stage seated in Dave Grohl's guitar throne?
Apparently.
So I don't know if Florence actually used that, but it probably predates the guitar throne.
If she didn't, she should have.
But it seems to be a thing now, right?
It's like it feels like that.
We remember this from school, don't we? Where there'd always be a kid in class who had a cast on, and we'd all sign like their cast, and they were like, you know, a celebrity because they broke a bone.
Yeah,
that's what it's like in the rock world.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, April 12th, 1984. Rush releases Grace Under Pressure, their 10th studio album, and, according to guitarist Alex Lifeson, their most satisfying.
That's why I was interested in this little tidbit, because of his quote right there where he said, most satisfying. So why do you think? We've already talked about Rush a million times, but I just found that where he says that it was their most satisfying, pretty telling, because a lot of people still think they're a prog band. But
I wonder when he said that. Like, how old? Like, is this a quote that he made at that time? Because here's one thing that happens in the rock and roll world is every artist always says at that time that their most recent record is their best record.
You know, that's a really
good point.
In spite
of the fact that as fans, we know it's shenanigans.
That's a good point, man. Everybody's, even like Caress of Steel, which they all admit is a shitty album, at the time they all said they were happy with it. So
there was a time
when, grain of salt, right?
There was a time when like James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich said, man, Lulu, this is the best thing we've ever done.
Hey man, I like Lulu.
But the point being is, it's a phenomenon in rock where every rock artist says that their most recent album is their best.
True.
Most satisfying, though, it's an interesting choice of words.
Here's one I thought pretty interesting. On April 13th of 96, seconds, mere seconds before their Saturday Night Live performance, Rage Against the Machine's roadies place upside down American flags on their amplifiers in a band sanctioned protest of the American political system, billionaire candidate Steve Forbes, who's hosting the show. Saturday Night Live crew quickly tore down the set or the flags. The band is booted from the building without a second song.
Wonder what the first song was.
I don't know.
I don't recall this performance. I don't remember Steve Forbes hosting SNL. But that dude was, like, not exactly an engaging speaker. So I can imagine that would be...
Exactly, right?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Rage guys, I'm curious what that first song was. Let's see, what year is this?
Do they have a...
96?
Do they have a song that's non-political enough to where they could play it on, or that doesn't
no,
really matter?
But I'm thinking 96 would have maybe been... Is that, like, the Renegades? Is that, like, the that covers album? Would have been, like, Renegades of Funk or something at that time?
They could play that one, Renegades of Funk, yeah, if that's one was it.
I mean,
anyway,
they're all great tracks.
Well,
let's move on. April 13th, 1979, Diamond David Lee Roth collapses on stage from exhaustion during a Van Halen tour stop in Spokane, Washington. 79, so that must have been, like, what tour would that be? Maybe, is that Women and Children First or Van Halen 2? Maybe Van Halen 2 and 79?
Probably 2. But let's look at that. Are we saying that he really was exhausted, or was it quote-unquote exhausted?
Yeah, what is exhaustion?
What does that mean?
I don't know, man. I mean, listen, it says he collapsed on stage. I've never heard of this before. But, like, if you're Dave, I mean, this is a dude who, like, every show jumps off the drum riser. He's doing his karate thing. I mean, it's a pretty physically exhausting show. So I could see where maybe Dave, you know, had to take a day off or something.
That's what I mean, there are legendary stories of him having blow contests with other musicians. So, I don't know, maybe that
well,
might have had
be
something
exhausted.
To do
with
it.
Well, he'd be wide awake for days on end.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know, man. It's the rock star lifestyle.
Who knows?
At this point, it's 79. It seems entirely plausible that dude collapsed on stage.
I'm glad he pushed through. I'm glad he's okay.
Yep.
Here's one I thought was pretty cool. I'm gonna skip the Dire Straits one, and I'm gonna pick this one. April 14, 2000, at a show at the Garage in London. You know who L7 is, right?
Yeah, man, girl, like a punk grunge band. From
exactly.
The 90s.
They raffle off a chance to quote unquote meet intimately with their drummer, D. Placus, claiming they want their fans to get more bang for their buck. Whether or not they actually go through with it is unclear, but it drums up a pretty cool publicity stunt. So they actually auctioned off an event with the drummer.
An intimate
you buying that?
Event?
That's apparently.
Do you mean like they would, I don't know, like light a candle, have a white tablecloth, maybe some food, watch Oprah? Like, what is intimate?
That sounds like a pretty cool Hallmarkish moment. I guess they really don't say, so it could be.
Yeah, it was an all-girl group, so she was basically like, I wonder if these were like all-comers, and, you know, what exactly was she willing to engage with the fans? I don't know. If anyone out there, you know, won this raffle, you know, shoot us an email or call the request line and let us know. All right, let's do one last one.
Yeah.
April 15th, 1989, Tone Loc's debut album, Locked After Dark? How would you say that?
That would be Locked After
Loked
Dark.
Locked After Dark?
Yeah, I believe.
Hits number one on the Billboard 200 thanks to the success of his platinum hit, Wild Thing.
So, why is this in here? Because of the band that we're doing. Because he samples Van Halen.
Yeah, Jamie's Crying. I liked Tone Loc back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, they were good songs, you know.
But here's a funny story for you. His fall from grace. A few years ago, he was actually booked to do the halftime show of a Cleveland Cavaliers game. And
was LeBron on the team then?
I can't remember. I don't think so. But he was so bad that the fans in the state in the arena booed him off the court.
Unbelievable.
Doing a halftime show of a basketball game.
How bad could it be? Because, I mean, I imagine he's just lip syncing the whole thing.
Yeah, right? There was a whole thing in the news the next day about how he was so bad that, like, he promptly left the building.
I mean, it was a Cleveland Cavaliers game. They could have just, I don't know, they could have just given away pierogi and kielbasa at halftime and maybe played some polka and been done with it, right?
It sounds like a good idea to me, because who doesn't like a good kielbasa? You know what I'm saying?
All right, that'll do it for the news. We'll take a short break and be right back.
I've been a part of the minimalist shoe community for a little while now. Tried more than one brand with varying results, but the shoes I'm wearing right now are from Xero. That's X-E-R-O. They're based out of Denver, Colorado. Let me tell you, these shoes are incredible. The style I'm wearing right now are the Prio, but they have other styles too, depending on your activity level, whether you're doing some heavy hiking, some road work, or if you just need some sandals for the beach. They're incredibly well put together. The soles come with a 5,000 mile warranty. The uppers come with the Huarache style strap. So if you need to tighten the uppers up a little bit to get them a little snug to your feet, you can do that very easily without compromising the comfort. The toe box is nice and wide to give your toes lots of room to spread out the way they're intended. Xero shoes look great and they feel even better. They're one of the most comfortable shoes I've ever worn, but don't take my word for it, people. Go to the website, here's our affiliate link, zeroshoes.com/go/RNRA affiliate. Do your own research, look at what they have. If you got yourself a pair, you would love them just as much as I do.
All right, Rico.
Yeah, man, what's up?
We need reviews.
What is that? What does that mean?
Well, it's like...
What does that mean to us?
Well, people who listen to our podcast, it would be swell if they would go to Apple Podcasts and write a review, or go to Spotify and give us a star rating, something between 1 and 5. It helps us.
How do we know how bad we really are if people don't tell us?
We need the feedback. And the algorithm loves it, and that algorithm is hungry.
It needs fed bad. You know what else needs fed bad? Your ego needs fed bad on this.
Yeah,
why we really want the reviews. Let's face it, right? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I get zero positive feedback in my life. People around me despise me. So I'm counting on total strangers to say nice things.
Yeah, I guess the point is to make your ego, like, completely non-manageable so that I want to stop doing this podcast.
And people might be motivated to do that if they dislike the podcast.
Right. If they want to see, in like, an intercompany battle between creative differences and how I can't stand how giant your ego is, all we need is for those people to start giving us reviews and feedback, and that'll happen, guys. You'll get some really good social media entertainment here.
It would be a backwards way for them to kill a podcast they hate by saying good things about it, so that my ego would rage out of control.
Exactly.
And you would storm off in a huff.
I think we all want that, right?
I know I do.
So please, do us a favor and give us some feedback.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955, on this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But Sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace, in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
All right, welcome back.
Welcome back. All right, it is time, Rico, to perform our autopsy on Van Halen's Love Walks In.
Love Walks In. Now, once
again, what are your general thoughts on this song? Do you have anything you'd like to share?
I have lots of thoughts on this song.
Can you give us a couple?
I'm not sure. Gosh, where do I start on this? All right, so... For a really long time, I never really gave this song much thought because it always seemed kind of like 80s ballady, kind of a lame ballad type of a song that I was never really into. And so I never really paid that much attention to it until I started paying attention to it here recently for this podcast. And then I went down the rabbit hole that is this song. And then I realized I was mistaken this entire time, and it's really not a ballad, and we'll talk about that. But I think that Sammy Hagar is a little off his rocker, just a tad.
Well, I will say this.
Tell me what you think.
Just broadly, I'm a huge Van Halen fan.
Me too.
I definitely am more of a DLR first six album Van Halen fan. I think they're all terrific.
Yeah.
5150 to me is a curious record. There are some songs on there I love. I love Best of Both Worlds. I love the title track.
There's a lot to like on this album. There really is.
Yeah, and there's songs I just hate on this record. Like, I think Get Up is a bad song. I don't like Summer Nights.
Do you want to know what you hate about this album? Sammy Hagar's lame lyrics. Well, is what you hate.
I think some of the music is weird too. It's got it's got a weird drum sound. I don't like where Eddie's guitar tone is.
That's what I was gonna say. I don't like the mix on the album. The mix is bad. The guitar is too far in the back.
He's playing that. What's that guitar called? The tiny one with the floating trem bar.
Oh, the Steinberger.
He plays a track on here called "Get Up," where the entire riff is like using that dive bomb capability, so it's like wah, 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 and it's a cool riff, but it's the entire song. He does it through the whole song, and then Sammy is just screaming at the top of his lungs.
Yeah.
It's just not even a song. It's like there's no components to it. It's like it's just all components and there's no song. But we're not talking about that song, but just broad strokes, it's a weird album for me. It's inconsistent. The song we're going to talk about tonight, Love Walks In, as far as like 80s ballady cheesiness, I like it a lot better than the other two.
Structurally speaking, it's well done.
Why Can't This Be Love? I don't like. And Dreams? I don't like. And so I like Love Walks In better than those.
Strangely enough, right?
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I like the chorus, Some Kind of Alien. I like the chorus. Dreams is a good song, but it's like I can only take it. It's a lot. It's very over the top, you know?
Here's what I'll say.
The cheese level is very,
the cheese level super high. But going back to what you were saying, I felt the same way about the mix on the album.
Terrible.
I didn't like the mix on the album. But if you watch the Live Without a Net video, if you can get a good recording of that, there's a good one on YouTube that I watched today, and I prefer live performances. I think we all do, really. But Big Red Truck on that one, but The mix in the Live Without a Net is way better.
Yeah, it's a terrific.
The performance comes off 1,000 times better because the mix is just better. The guitar is a little less lame. It's more in the front.
Yep.
The drums sound great. I mean, everything sounds so much better.
I think the drums on 5150, I think they're electronic at that
point. Some of them are Simmons drums, I think, and some of them are acoustic.
So the album just has a, I mean, let's just say it. It's got a super 80s cocaine ears tone to it.
Everything is whitewashed because the guitar is so far in the back that it just kind of washes together with everything and nothing really stands out.
It's just got, it sounds like 1985 or 6 or whatever this is.
And when
in a bad way.
And when you have a guitar that's pushed back a little bit, don't you have to have something else that kind of can compensate for that? But they don't, because Michael Anthony is not good enough to be able to compensate for having the guitar that far back. So that's why I think it just all got kind of whitewashed and sounded really bad.
I mean, 1984, the record before, sounds great. And it had like a really cool mix and cool tones and more organic sounding. It's just they switched it up. I didn't care for it. But I will say about the Live Without a Net video,
yeah,
it's funny because I have a feeling that Sammy's going to take it a little bit in this episode. But in my opinion, on that live performance, he's the star. He is terrific in that live, on that live video.
He was great.
And the tracks where he plays the guitar and Eddie jumps on the keyboards, mm-hmm. instead now it's all the keyboards are like piped in and Eddie stays on the guitar.
Yeah.
When he was still around, but in recent years. But back then, when he would hop on the keys and then Sammy would play the mm-hmm. guitar parts, he's a killer guitar player.
For sure.
And he's like the MVP of that performance.
Yeah.
I mean, he is amazing on that.
Yeah, that whole show is killer, and there's tons of rewatch value on that because he really is. That's why what I was saying before, that live performance is 1,000 times better than the album came off. The album was terrible.
All right. Enough about 5150, enough side talk, we're here to perform an autopsy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
And we're not changing any names tonight. The aims are still going to be Michael, Eddie, Alex, and Sammy. It's 5150 time. Hello, baby!
Oh, right. Yeah.
We've got 5 categories. Gratuitous boomerism.
Boomerism.
Excessive misogyny. Wanton whiteness. Malignant machismo. And culture vulturism.
Vultures!
Let's take it from the top.
Let's
Rico,
do it.
Rico, gratuitous boomerism. Give me your score.
Yeah, man. Before we start that, I just want to see if
come on, dude. I just gave a big build-up.
No, I know. It was great.
No, I know.
My fault. You know how we decided last episode that if it's 3 or below that they actually contributed to rock and roll?
Right on.
And originally, our score system was 8 out of at least an 8 to have contributed to the death of rock and roll.
Yes,
I think in order to even things out, we should make it 7 so that it's 3 on either side and 4 in the middle. That kind of balances it out a little bit. How do you feel
You're
about
throwing
that?
This at me live on the air?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. This is unprofessional as a mug.
I know.
I'm going to give that a big honking whatever.
Okay.
There's got to be a sound effect for that somewhere. Isn't there one about like a brain exploding?
Me and breaking your mojo. My bad. I'm sorry on that.
All right.
So
gratuitous boomerism. Rico, what is your score?
Gratuitous boomerism. Gosh, man. Yeah, that's going to be high for me because of the cheesy balladness of this. So this one's going to get a full-on plus one for me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This, because it just reeks of mid-80s, this is a boomer record made by boomers. It even opens. I did the Hello Baby from Good Enough. It even opens with that big bopper reference to like 50s. What could be more boomer? So, I mean, it's a big plus one.
Am I mistaken, but isn't Sammy Hagar?
He's way older than
that. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. He's profound, not profoundly, but he's
like 6-7 years old.
Yeah. So in the 80s, so he may have even been an adult when Big Bopper did Hello Baby, for all I know.
Yeah, but literally, he's in his first record with... Thank you. On his first record with Van Halen, the very first sound he makes on the record
is a Big Bopper thing.
Is Hello Baby. It's like we are going...
trying super hard, man.
It's really
forced.
Desperate. Yeah, thirsty.
Tough.
All right, Category two,
yeah.
Excessive misogyny.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that on this one. It's a song about aliens, Scott, and there's no misogyny in the extraterrestrial.
I agree. There's plenty of it elsewhere on the record. Take a look at Summer Nights. Take a look at the aforementioned Good Enough, where he says, rack a what? Yeah, and
get your pole, go down the fishing hole, right, in the Summer Nights. I'm going to, do I want to go?
So it's a zero for me.
Yeah, do I want to go full on? I got to go full on negative one on this, because when you're writing songs about extraterrestrials downloading your brain, there's nothing misogynistic about that.
No.
So that's a full on minus one for me.
All right, category three. We are rolling right through this. We are in the middle of an autopsy, and you, loyal listener on the edge of your seat, wanton whiteness, Rico, give it a rating.
Whiteness is full on plus 50 on this one for me.
Yeah,
this is a plus one. There's everything white about this. There's no multiculturalism in this. This is a white dude talking about being his brain downloaded by an alien. There is nothing multicultural about that. That is straight up white man stuff.
Yeah, you never hear or see like inner city black dudes talking about being abducted by aliens. It's
hell
always
no.
Some hilljack in the middle of nowhere,
yeah.
In some cornfield. These are white people problems, being abducted by aliens. It happened to Elliot. It happened to Richard Dreyfuss. We've seen it. I'm giving it a plus one, too.
That's killing me, man.
On to the next category.
I mean, I feel like he should be wearing an old dirty trucker's hat when he's talking about this.
It's embarrassing. It really
is.
It's
bad.
And you know the Van Halen brothers, two dudes from Holland who were immigrants to this country, hard scrabble lives, had to fight and claw to make it here.
Didn't even speak English when they got here.
Yeah, they got to be looking at him like, What the fuck?
I mean,
what the fuck?
What in the?
Do you think they had time to even worry about or to have, you know, visions of anal probes? These guys were just trying to pay the bills.
I'm just trying to. In fact, I read that I think he says it in the concert. This was the first project that they worked on, was this song.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
I don't remember this song?
Yeah, he said, I think he said this was the first thing that they worked on, was
this
song.
This is just
for what a way to open up a relationship with your new bandmates than to do a song about being a having alien visitation by the Nine. He has a name for these people.
Yeah, the Nine.
The Nine.
No doubt, man. I mean, it is just bizarre. And it's just further evidence that Eddie Van Halen paid exactly zero attention to the lyrics that were being written in Van Halen.
No, he, how much did he pay attention to any of the lyrics, really? He was too busy in his own world playing.
He's a total space cadet in his own right.
So it probably was just no thing for him, right?
All right, on to the next category, malignant machismo.
Yeah, this is going to be a zero for me, too. I just the fact that it's cheesy, sappy, fake ballad just saps all the manliness out of it. But then when you throw some weird-ass extraterrestrial shit, too, that takes it down even more for me. So I'm going to go negative one on this one. No, I'm going to go zero.
Track is on its way to saving rock and roll.
I know, man. This song is contributing to rock and roll, and, man, I am really disappointed about that.
We're going to have to reevaluate. We're just making it up on the fly. Anyhow, it's extremely scientific. Rico, next category, culture vulturism.
I think they're man, this is a kind of a tough one for me because before Sammy Hagar got to Van Halen, he wasn't writing this cheesy ballad shit.
No, he was rocking.
He was
rocking
the red
dude.
Rocker, man. He couldn't drive 55, right? There's only one way to rock.
You're right.
And this is not the way to rock. And so I feel like they're vulturing the cheesy 80s ballad.
Yeah.
And capitalizing on it. And I feel like something tells me that the line "Love Comes Walking In" was kind of a throw-in to give it the ballad feel so that people would latch on to it more.
Because the rest of it's just straight alien.
Because the rest of it is straight fucking kooky ass shit. You know what I mean? So are you buying that he... Let me ask, because I've been wanting to ask you this for like days now. Are you buying that he put that line in there on purpose to go along with the rest of the lyrics?
Which line?
Love comes walking
The title?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't, I mean...
Has nothing to do with the rest of the song.
I don't know what, I mean, I think that he's, I mean, what I read is he's trying to say it's like, love can be like an alien coming into your life, something different that you don't expect. So he's trying, it's some clumsy metaphor that makes sense in Sammy's brain. I don't know what it means. The lyrics are weird. The song, I think the song is good.
It's a good, listen, man, Eddie wrote the song. He didn't Eddie write the music. He writes all the music.
Yeah.
So it's going to be musically pretty much 95% of what they write musically is going to be good because he was just a fantastic songwriter.
Yeah.
But Hagar's lyrics, especially these, are just kooky, man. Like the rabbit hole that I went down reading and about this song was just, I had no idea. Like I was honestly surprised as fuck when I started reading about where this shit came from.
What's your score for Culture Vulturism?
Culture Vulturism, I'm giving him a full one on this one.
I'm going to say, what is he? I mean, I don't know that I see. Is there part of me says it's definitely of its time. It has the 80s keyboardy ballady thing that was big. So in that sense, yeah, kind of hopping on his train, but it's also just really fucking weird given that the subject matter is aliens. And given that it's Van Halen at that time, just the fact that Van Halen did a song like this is fucking weird. People got to realize this whole 5150 record with Dreams, Love Walks In, and the other track about When It's Love. Is that the one that's on here? Which one is it? How do I know when it's love? Which one is it? I get these love songs confused.
Why can't this be love?
So Why Can't This Be Love, ballady, ballad, ballad, Dreams, ballady, ballad, 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 and then Love Walks In, more ballad shit. So just
But it's a fake ballad, though.
Yeah, but it was like they started doing this 80s keyboard ballad stuff that you never heard them do before. And if they did have keyboards in the music before, which they did, going all the way back to Women and Children First, it was used in like a cool way. Mm. You know, now it just sounded like Michael Bolton or that.
And I think the keyboard tone that they use in this song is bad.
It's bad.
I don't even like the keyboard tone that he's using.
So I guess I'm going to give him a plus one just because it's kind of like vulturism of the times. But lyrically, it's so fucking out there in terms of what Sammy's talking about.
Yeah.
And since we've reached the end, before we add these up, if I can take the opportunity to hear, just riff on Sammy for a minute, because I've asked myself this. Why am I love David Lee Roth as a member of Van Halen. I even like his solo stuff. I think the guy is intellectually curious. I think he's super creative. I think he's got all kinds of influences and ideas that come out in his music, everything from Frank Sinatra to blues to hard rock. He's just always been kind of vital creatively. But David Lee Roth is like, he's an insufferable human being that people can't stand to be around for any window of time because he never shuts up, you know? But and he was like, he's like a rich boy. He was raised by, you know, his dad is a doctor. He grew up a rich kid, you know, so you would think, eh. And then Sammy, just the opposite. Sammy's dad is an alcoholic. He grew up poor. So you would think that like I'd be in like Sammy's corner. I want to root for Sammy. Sammy's the poor kid done good. He made a shit ton of money off his tequila and his rock and roll career.
Mm-hmm.
But Sammy as a musical artist, Sammy's got the better voice than David Lee.
Way better.
Although I like character singers more than I like guys who can sing. And so I just like what David Lee Roth does better than Hagar. But I have to admit, Hagar is technically a far more gifted singer than David Lee Roth could ever hope to be.
He's a better vocalist, but that doesn't make him more interesting.
So why do I like David Lee Roth? But why am I so down on Sammy when if you just put it all, if you look at his profile, I should be in Sammy's corner. But I just feel like as a songwriter, he's just lazy and his lyrics are just obvious. And it's almost like he's not trying and that no one in the band is holding him to account to like do better, you know?
Because he's super vanilla and I don't think he's as intellectually capable as David Lee Roth. To have that kind of snarky tongue-in-cheek kind of an attitude that David Lee Roth has had his entire life, you got to have a few extra brain cells to be able to cook up that kind of shit.
Yeah, he's pretty much a genius.
Hagar is super vanilla, and I just don't think that he's got enough upstairs to be able to cook up something super cool like that.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny is I like a lot of Van Hagar tracks. I really do. And I like Sammy as a guy, you know? I'm sure it'd be fun to sit on the beach and drink tequila with him. But I just don't care much for his art, and that kind of pains me to say.
It's just kind of, as good of a vocalist as he is, just in generally just kind of is a little too vanilla for me.
All right.
So let's add these
spin
up.
Spin it back. Let's add up our totals. We have concluded our autopsy, and let me see what my numbers are. Good listener, if you're inhaling a little bit of smoke, it might be from the gears turning in my brain as I add.
Please don't try this at home. We are amateurs.
Rico, I've got 3.
I've also got 3.
And that's a total of what?
6.
Should we, is there a drum roll or anything we can do?
So, as we calculate what happened, I've got, 6 in the scale of things. They did not contribute to the death of rock and roll. Congratulations. Right.
Congratulations. My dog's barking. Hey, Bolt, he's trying to ruin the end of the podcast.
Bolt, the greatest dog on the planet.
But he's not contributing to our podcast in a positive way right now. All right. Any other final closing thoughts on Van Halen? 5150, Love Walks In.
Yeah, it's a, man, I was really on the fence with this album, like I said. Just to kind of go back to what I said before, there's a lot to like about this album, but there's a lot not to like, and it kind of balances out and just kind of feels super whitewashed to me, so... But I will say once again that the Live Without a Net performance is super fucking fantastic. There's a shitload of rewatch on that. Like, you can watch it over and over again. Hagar is amazing, but not a big fan of the album because of the mix and his lyrics I just don't like. But there's the musically, I think Eddie's songwriting is as good as any of the first 6 albums on this one.
Well, I'm going to say that, and my final thoughts are, as scientific as we were, this test has once again failed me, because I would say that this song absolutely contributed to the death of rock and roll. I cannot imagine a Gen Z Billie Eilish Juice WRLD fan listening to this song and not thinking anything other than, what kind of old ass lame boomer shit is this? Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mystique anymore.
After to the dawn. Love it to the morning. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at @RNRAutopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.